Chapter 14. Life. Essence. Too late, Pelor Kaladin realised that he had forgotten to carry out the sealing ritual on closing down the control panel. He had neglected to put his right palm on the sealing rune and intone the formula of protection. Had he done so, anyone trying to fly the ship illicitly would have found it rebellious and difficult to handle. As it was, Coiler was piloting with expert ease. How could he have been so remiss? Kaladin asked himself. Something must have nudged his mind into forgetfulness. Perhaps the same something, awful thought, that had guided him here. What to do? There was no sense of motion within the wandering star, buffeted though it was by the turbulent atmosphere. Just the same, he felt it might be dangerous to tussle with Coiler for control. Silently, he crept into the rear cabin and shook Ruglow awake. The trader groaned as he emerged from his slumber and scratched his black goatee beard.
"What is it?" he mumbled.
"We're landing on the planet. Coiler hasn't played straight with us."
Kaladin couldn't read Ruglow's expression by the light of the emergency electro-looming, but he heard a sharp intake of breath. The trader sounded frightened.
"Stop him, Pelor!"
"I can try, but we might crash."
Ruglow groaned again and heaved himself to his feet. He went lurching into the front chamber, his hand hitting the illumination bar on the wall. Light sprang into the cabin.
"What are you doing?"
Coiler cast a sneaking glance back at him, then reached for the little ribbed bottle that stood on the control board. He put it to his lips, gulped, then offered it to Ruglow.
"Only one swallow left. Take it."
Automatically, Ruglow accepted the bottle, then stood and stared at the screen over the control panel. The boiling brown clouds parted. The surface of the planet was revealed in a sepia glare seeping from the low cloud cover. The planet was a gallimaufry, a jumble of tumbled images. Streams of fire, glittering waterfalls, poured from turbulent clouds. A strange yellow lightning, if indeed it was lightning, criss-crossed the gap between clouds and surface, creating an impression of transient giant figures stalking the landscape, flickering in and out of existence. Were they real, or an optical illusion? Ruglow assumed the latter, for Coiler steered the ship straight through a huge, bearded figure which stretched from the ground to the clouds, waving a hammer that had suddenly appeared in their path. Kaladin knew better. During the instant when the cargo ship had entered the giant's midriff, he had felt a psychic shiver that was not imaginary. The planet was producing transient beings, generating them from the cloud-to-ground energy discharges.
"Look out!"
Ruglow screeched. A huge stone structure had suddenly loomed up, not transient this time, but solid and permanent. It was a vast castle, miles high, its battlements merging into the cloud. There was no way that Coiler could avoid it. He did not even try to. The wandering star plunged straight into the massive stone pile. Glimpses of interior apartments, halls and stairwells zipped past. Then they were out the other side. A ghost castle, Kaladin thought.
"Take us back up,"
Ruglow ordered sternly. But before he knew it, he had put the liqueur bottle to his lips and tipped it up. The small amount of spirit left in it crept down his throat, creating the blessed explosion that spread through every cell of his being.
Ugh.
It was like being reborn. The terror Ruglow had felt on learning what Coiler had done, the terror of meeting Angelica again, evaporated, especially when he realised that Coiler's motive was only to get more of the liqueur sooner. And what was wrong with that? Kaladin crept forward, studying Coiler's hands on the controls. He felt disappointed that none of the liqueur was left for him. Didn't he deserve some too? He shook his head, trying to clear his brain. The atmosphere was awash with psychic forces. He could sense that much, and they were affecting his judgment. He felt an urge to open his warp eye, but desisted. He feared what he might see. He returned his attention to the phantasmagoria that was hurtling past them. The immense bulk of one of the great atmosphere-piercing mountains slid by, its lower slopes clad in real trees as well as what looked like buildings. The flickering lightning was creating a strobe-like effect, making him feel slightly nauseous. Ruglow staggered forward. For a moment, it looked as though he might try to wrench Coiler from the controls. Then he drew back, as if realizing how dangerous this would be. He seemed slightly drunk. They had decelerated and were close to the ground now. racing over what appeared to be an industrial area, with smoke rising from sheds and furnaces, which flickered in the strobing lightning. Then something happened which struck terror into Caladan. The terrain ahead of them swelled up, forming a vast head and shoulders struggling to emerge from the landscape. A huge hand shot out and seized hold of the wandering star. Despite the instant dead stop, the occupants of the craft remained steady on their feet. The inertial control, which made space travel possible, was able to handle the forces involved. The sound of the engine could still be heard. They found themselves looking straight into the face of the thing that held them. Was it a spirit of the planet itself? Sticking out from its bare skull were spikes, much like the mountain spires visible from space. Its visage was a parody of a human, with round, staring eyes, a toothless, drooping mouth, and a hooked nose. It grinned inanely as it stared at the cargo ship, moving its head from side to side. This was no mere apparition. The ship was held firmly in the massive fist. The thing opened its mouth, a red cave leading into a deep gullet, eyes bulging in anticipation. Nose first, the ship was pushed towards the gaping lips. Then, Coiler gave a sudden flick of the guidance levers. They shot out of the Earth Giant's grip and were away.
Ha! They're not as dangerous as they look, he said casually.
Ruggalo was silent, numb with shock. Not so Caladan.
Take us up, Coiler. It was going to eat us. Take us back up.
It's all right. We're just about there.
This is insane.
Caladan decided he must act. Coiler was not wearing the seat restraint. He attempted to push him aside and grasp the controls, but Caladan was puny physically, unused to physical conflict, and Coiler, despite being small, had a wiry strength. He hung on despite all Caladan's efforts, yelling at him to let go. Caladan was desperate. He yanked with all his might, trying to turn the nose of the ship spaceward. Coiler yanked in the opposite direction, while Ruggalo roared in alarm and threw himself into the fray. The end result was that Coiler's head hit the control board. The view screen, had anyone been looking at it, was a flurry. He heard a loud, prolonged grinding noise as the ship hit the ground and went sliding a long distance, throwing up mounds of earth before slewing round and coming to a stop. The engine giving out a coughing, protesting note. Caladan reached out and punched the room to switch it off. Silently, but feverishly, reciting the canticle of damage limitation from the Navigator's Catechism. But the prayer came far too late. As he saw from the board's glowing sigils, the wandering star was old and not very sound structurally. Ruggalo had never had the money to renovate the gradually weakening hull. The impact of the forced landing had wrought damage everywhere. The view screen was shattered, but that did not stop them from seeing outside. Just below the buckled oval screen was a rent which clearly went through all three of the hull's layers. Through it, they could see earth and uprooted, ochre-coloured vegetation. Caladan scanned the damage sigils again, his heart sinking. Ruggalo would have tools to repair minor damage, but this was not minor. The damage to the hull was bad enough. But the warp screens were ruptured too. Repairing those was a task for a tech adept. The wandering star, even if it could take off again, which Caladan doubted, would never make it out of the Eye of Terror.
My ship! My ship! It's all I have left!
Maynard Ruggalo's grief was real. He, Caladan, and Coiler stood on a mound of deep brown soil that had been thrown up by the wandering star's crash landing. The furrow it had dug stretched away into the distance. As for the ship itself, its veins had all been torn off and lay scattered alongside the furrow. The hull, which loomed over them like some enormous beached sea monster, was dented and crushed, the gargoyles obliterated. The low clouds boomed, pouring down their glowing streams. The lightning-like energy crisscrossing the gap between cloud and land spat and crackled. The spectral figures the strikes created dancing over the landscape and seeming to mock them all. Caladan thought Ruggalo's emotion misplaced. The issue was not the loss of the trader's property, it was how they were going to escape this mad and nightmarish region. His mind turned to thoughts of Gundrum's painted spaceship. The air was restless, buffeting them with hot gusts. Wildly, Ruggalo looked about him.
There are people on this planet. I saw buildings on the way down. They could help us hoist the ship upright, seal the rents.
Caladan shook his head.
Unless they know how to repair and tune warp screens, forget it. In fact, forget it even if they do know. Everything and everyone in the Eye is tainted with chaos. I'm not going into the warp with screens that haven't been dedicated to the Emperor.
Coiler grunted, shaking loose his long jerkin. Kaladin glimpsed the melter gun hidden inside it.
Well, don't blame me, he said. I would have got us down in one piece, nose up. Let's go and see Gundrum.
Go and see Gundrum. Ruggalo's response was a disbelieving shriek, a frenzy of fear and protest.
Angelica's with him.
Coiler stared hard.
Do you want to spend the rest of your life here? We have to persuade Gundrum to take us back out of the Eye.
The thought of a journey in company with the demon-possessed Angelica made even Kaladin quake. Ruggalo rounded on the navigator.
This is all your fault. It's all happened since I met you. I should have known better than to team up with a psychotic navigator.
He halted in mid-tirade. He knew he should not blame Pelor. His own recklessness surely was more to blame, but he was wishing himself safely back on Gendova, even though stranded and without a navigator, where, he reminded himself, he would have lost the Wandering Star in any case to pay off a debt to some pilfering local merchant. What ignominy. Ruggalo almost preferred things this way. If it weren't for the flickering half-seen giant figures, the constant booming, the luminous sepia light that was sending him into a trance. The booming was forming voices, shouting out something to the landscape below. But what? He couldn't tell. He shook his head, trying to clear his brain. Coiler pointed. When it crashed, the Wandering Star had been brought to a halt by a rise in the ground. Three figures had appeared at the top of this rise, and were looking down on them. Gundrum, Angelica, and Fofo. The rugged, burly Fofo was glaring fiercely. Angelica, still clad in her brief basque, was smiling and not looking at all threatening now. As for Gundrum, he looked even more extraordinary, even more angular and gesticulatory than before. Somehow, he seemed to have grown an extra foot in height. Was that a trick of the light? They set off down the slope. Kaladin saw Ruggalo go green and break out in a sweat, sagging with terror. Coiler put out his arm to stop the trader from running in panic back into the Wandering Star. The trio halted some yards away, no more than glancing at the bulk of the crippled cargo ship, in whose misty flickering shadow they now stood. Gundrum smiled as if in quiet satisfaction, his pale lips barely moving. Angelica laughed, a trilling contralto sound, as if in pleasure and welcome. Fofo, on the other hand, stamped his feet and beat the air with clenched fists. Then, his tantrum over, he threw back his head and howled with laughter. Coiler stepped forward to meet them.
"I am come to offer contrition, Gundrum," he said.
Gundrum raised his eyebrows more than seemed physically possible.
"And to tickle my sister again with your melter gun, which I see you still have on you, Coiler. By my roots, by my words, by my twisted thoughts and simple innocent deeds, what do we have here? A ship on the rocks and a crew in trouble."
Ruggalo and Kaladin both shrank as his gaze lit on them. It was impossible to tell what was going through his mad mind. Then he waved a negligent hand at Ruggalo and turned to the grinning Angelica.
"Do you still want him, sister?"
Ruggalo gagged, bent over, and vomited up what he had eaten earlier in orbit. Kaladin, himself paralysed with fear, would have moved to assist him, but instead it was Angelica who did so. Shocked and bewildered, he watched as she placed an arm around his shoulders, wiped his mouth with a handkerchief she took from her bosom, and murmured words of reassurance. Strangely, her words seemed to calm him. He smiled and thanked her, a gesture which convinced Kaladin that his partner had indeed lost his reason. She fell back, continuing to look on him sympathetically.
"Well, what is it you want, my old friend?" Gundrum asked Coiler.
"A slug of essence for old time's sake?"
Coiler's demeanour was begging.
"Lemonade for your soul. Do your roots first for nourishment. Come then, let bygones be bygones."
He turned and led the way. By his fierce expression, Coyla indicated to his companions the necessity of following. They mounted the rise and found themselves looking down on a broad, shallow valley through which meandered a narrow river, gleaming like tarnished metal in the subdued light. Up current was the river's source, a fierce cataract cascading down from the cloud cover by some alchemy, becoming water by the time it reached the valley. There lay Gundrum's painted spaceship, looking sleek and shiny, quite unlike any ship of the Imperium. A few hundred yards further off began a sprawl of buildings lining the near riverbank. Constructed, it appeared, of burnished brass, their piled-together outlines wavering and winding. Smoke, steam, and puffs of coloured powder gusted from vents in their upper surfaces. One building spanned the stream, much larger than the others. It had three chimneys putting out a grime of smoke and red sparks. The scene was unmistakably industrial and had the look of being an outlying part of a larger town that was out of sight. Coyla had said that Gundrum got his trade goods mainly from one place. Could that place be as small as this? A row of workshops rather than a whole planet? It made sense. Perhaps Gundrum had chanced upon the place early in his wanderings, and since then kept the same route. It could explain why he had managed to survive in such a very dangerous part of the galaxy. They descended into the valley. A small pavilion of vermilion velvet had been set up between the painted spaceship and the riverbank. And for the first time, Ruggalo and Kaladin saw other human beings. A line of half a dozen men was being conducted beside the river, linked together by iron neckbands, hands tied behind their backs. Slaves. Their guards, a party of four, wore plain ochre tabards and leggings of leathery material. They carried gold-coloured weapons, guns of some kind, with flanged muzzles and twin stocks. One for steadying at the front, one with a trigger at the back, much like Coyler's Meltagun. The prisoner's subdued clothing of black and brown seemed familiar to Ruggalo. As they drew closer, one spotted Kaladin and seemed to recognise him. His pale, despairing face came suddenly alive with desperate hope.
"Help us, sirs, please!"
"He's from Gandova," Kaladin exclaimed in surprise. "Do you remember? He was one of those who tried to kidnap me. How did he get here?"
"They're all from Gandova," Ruggalo said, placing their style of clothing now. "It looks like they got into the eye after all."
Angelica's trilling laughter rang out again. The guards hastened the pace, forcing the slaves towards the buildings in the near distance.
"Come, my friends," Gundrum boomed, his voice mingling with the ever-present rumbling coming from above. "We will drink a toast."
With a graceful, extravagant gesture, he invited them into the pavilion. Kaladin could not explain to himself why he and Ruggalo accepted that invitation, willing to share the interior with Angelica. The former episode seemed like a dream. She now exuded a sense of utter harmlessness. Inside, a round table stood on three curved legs, with three straight-backed chairs arranged around it. On the table were two of the cask-shaped liqueur bottles, one a sombre brown in colour, the other a faintly glowing orange. Fofo declined to enter the tent. He stomped off towards the rainbow spaceship. But Coyla almost ran into the dimmed interior. He sat down at the table, snatched up a bottle, then, as if remembering himself, put it down again and stared at the tabletop with a strained expression.
"I always knew you would find a way to rejoin us, Coyla,"
Gundrum said, lugubriously, pouring from the orange bottle into a tiny glass.
"Yes, of course you did," Coyla admitted. "So let us drink to it. Only a local vintage, I'm afraid." "We'll do better tomorrow, eh?"
Coyla grabbed the glass Gundrum offered and let the thick liqueur slide down his throat. A look of relief and ecstasy transformed his face. He sat there with closed eyes, listening deep into himself. Gundrum poured out thickly oozing drops for Ruggalo, Kaladin and himself. His own seemed to go into his mouth without the glass touching his lips at all, the slug flying into place of its own accord.
"Is it not a strange thing?" he said, with a note of satisfaction.
how those wishing to trade into the Eye find their way here, to this little place. What could account for that?
What indeed? Angelica said in a pleasant contralto. She reached out, took the other bottle, the brown one, and unstoppered it. She did not bother with a glass. She lifted the bottle above her tilted head and poured the entire contents into her mouth. The liqueur flowed like a glacier, like syrup, straight down her throat without her having to swallow. Ruglow remembered her long tubular tongue when she had been demon-transformed. He imagined her extending it into the bottle to withdraw the last of the liqueur. But she did not. She seemed entirely normal now. She flung the bottle down into the scraggy vegetation which made up the floor of the tent. She sighed.
We must get something better than this, dear brother.
We shall, dearest one. By the roots of my desire, we shall.
Ruglow swallowed his little glassful, seeing Kaladin do the same. He felt the now familiar electric delight and power suffuse all through him, stopping his thoughts, turning his feelings around, filling his inner consciousness with sparkling colour, making him feel immortal and invincible. He gasped.
How long before one becomes addicted to this? Like...
He hesitated, then said it anyway.
Like Coiler. One is addicted already, Gundrum assured him. One has always had this addiction. It is not something one needs to acquire. The liqueur is an essence. The essence of life. You like being alive. Is that not true?
Gundrum poured into the three glasses again, then spoke to Coiler.
This one bottle will not last us long enough. Go to the distillery and ask for what they owe me. They will know what I mean.
Coiler hastily swallowed his slug of life essence, greedily prized the bottle from Gundrum's hand, and served himself two more, which he swallowed quickly, one after the other. Then he nodded, rose, and left the tent. The level of the remaining bottle quickly fell, and with it so did the sense of danger and the natural fear on the part of Ruglow and his navigator. Angelica seemed to have been made sleepy by having drunk an entire bottle by herself. She lay down, relaxed, and appeared to have fallen asleep. Gundrum looked down at her, his expression softening, which, on his hard, angular face, looked comical.
My dear little one, he said huskily, see how peaceful she is. Yes, I know you have seen a different side to her, which has made you afraid. But look at her now. You see her as she was when young, before we learned to enjoy the changes of this region. An innocent, harmless young girl.
He could not tell if he was celebrating or lamenting her demonic possession. Perhaps, Ruglow thought, the demon had left her. He hardly cared right now. He couldn't understand now why he had let Kaladin talk him into making escape from the Eye their first priority. He felt strong and ambitious. The loss of the Wandering Star was only a setback. They had made it into the magical realm with its magical products. All he had to do was find some way of obtaining those products, then find some way of transporting them. He reminded himself that all this required the cooperation of Gundrum, and that was uncertain.
I have lost my ship, he said. Will you take us out of the Eye? I can still be useful to you, once I get another. I seem to remember we had an agreement.
He threw in the last as a make-weight. Gundrum had never been serious about that, if Coiler was right. He frowned. Wasn't there something else? Something about a duel? Funny, the thought seemed to evade him, like something he had dreamed.
Certainly, I will take you, Gundrum said. Both of you. When we make our way out, that is. We may visit elsewhere first. And what can I do for you in return? I am sure you will be able to pay for your passage.
The liqueur bottle was empty now. The lights in the tent was fading. Gundrum stood,
leaning back over Ruggalo and putting his face, with its flaking parchment-like skin, close to his.
"You have pleased me, though you know it not. You have shown the energy and enterprise to get deep into the enchanted realm. Not many do that. You deserve a reward."
The two travellers found themselves both repelled and hypnotically attracted by Gundrum's presence, and also by his words, which seemed to open up new vistas. Ruggalo realised that this little world, bizarre though it was unlikely to be Gundrum's sole source of merchandise. From somewhere, he had got the Eldar Wraithguard, for one thing. Perhaps it was the liqueur. They had both drunk nearly a third of a bottle, but they seemed to be seeing everything through new eyes, through someone else's eyes. Perhaps the liqueur caused mild hallucinations, Kaladin thought. Many stimulants and beverages did that.
"The young men who passed by must have done the same," Kaladin pointed out. "We happen to know where they come from. Why are they prisoners?"
"A sad tale," Gundrum said. "Criminals and fools, far out of their depth, financed by some unscrupulous business magnate who also provided them with a kidnapped navigator. They managed to follow our trail, as you did, but were taken as slaves by this planet's natives. I can do nothing for them, even if I wish to."
Kaladin jumped to his feet on hearing this.
"A navigator? Where is he?"
"Dead, I fear. He was still aboard their vessel when..." "Where is their ship?" Ruggalo pressed.
"Eaten,"
Gundrum said after a pause.
"There are earth giants on this planet who rear out of the ground and devour anything that comes by, especially if it is made of metal. But don't worry, we are safe here."
A strange sound came from outside. They followed Gundrum out of the tent and saw a trail of natives pulling sledges over the buff-coloured turf from the direction of the workshops and distillery. The sky still boomed and flashed its continental lightning, though it was probably not lightning, Kaladin thought, but connected in some manner with the energy sizzling between the tips of the Spire Mountains. But the light had fallen somewhat. Night was a long time coming on this planet, the sunlight spreading through the cloud layer and past the Terminator line. True darkness probably didn't come at all. The energy discharges would see to that. The leading sledge hauler, wearing the same dull-coloured tabard and leggings as the slave guards, greeted Gundrum.
"Here is your payment, as agreed."
Payment for what? Kaladin thought. Slaves? But if so, how had Gundrum obtained them? His own story made more sense. Gundrum gestured them closer. The first half a dozen sledges were filled with hundreds of liqueur bottles, products of the distillery. He pulled out four, then handed two to Ruggalo and two to Kaladin.
"The rest are for export," he announced. "If we revive our former agreement, perhaps you can help me distribute them to a greater profit."
"My fortunes will have to revive first," Ruggalo murmured, half to himself.
Gundrum was off examining the rest of the sledges. Kaladin took Ruggalo by the arm and pulled him back.
"What's the matter with you?" the navigator hissed. "Why did you let that girl touch you? She's demon-possessed. Don't you remember what she nearly did to you?"
Ruggalo's response was glassy.
"I don't think she has the demon anymore. She's really nice."
Kaladin sighed and drew away. He too had felt Angelica's exciting magnetism, her seductive charm even, but another part of him had recoiled as though from a poisonous snake, and that had been before her demonic transformation on the fish planet. Ruggalo willingly obeyed when Gundrum beckoned him over to take a look in the other sledges, offering to show him the output of the workshops ranged along the river. In spite of his essence drunkenness, Ruggalo was disappointed by the contents of the first sledge he came to. Gundrum proudly displayed an assortment of metal dishes, bowls, plates, trenchers and goblets, ornately adorned, often eccentrically shaped, but otherwise unremarkable.
"What's special about these?" he asked peevishly.
The light could be purchased in any bazaar of the Imperium.
Gundrum laughed in delight.
You might think, but nothing made by an artisan of the Imperium compares with what you see here. Whatever is eaten from these vessels is twice, three times, five times as delectable.
Ruggalo blinked.
I see you do not believe me, friend, Gundrum said, his normally exulting, hooting voice becoming mournful again. These will excite you more if you seek to peddle your wares among the curious and the lovers of the exotic.
The second sledge was stacked with cases of various sizes. Gundrum unfastened the clasps on one. Inside, nestled amid a white downy packing, lay a cylindrical instrument, 3 or 4 inches long, pewter-coloured, dotted with studs. Carefully, Gundrum lifted it out and handed it to Ruggalo.
Look through this. Tell me what you see.
At one end was an eyepiece. A telescope? Ruggalo placed it against his right eye, squinting the other and peering into the cylinder. He saw nothing until Gundrum applied his long fingers to the row of studs, manipulating them in some way. Suddenly a scene sprang into view. He was looking down on a city of the Imperium from an aerial viewpoint. It was easy to recognize the massive, brutal architecture with its florid decoration, the great buttresses which held up the oversized structures, and grimness. He moved the instrument and found he was panning across the planetary surface. Even on the far horizon, the city still extended its excesses, but mixed now with belching smoke and flame from factories and forges. He could not name the city. There were a million like it. Gundrum touched the studs again. The scene shifted. He was looking down through a transparent dome that floated in space. Gundrum twisted a milled ring on the scope. He seemed to pass through the dome and to see the wondrous inhabitants within, as unlike the Imperium as it was possible for anything to be, for elegance and beauty. And the people who inhabited it? No, they were not people, exactly. They were too tall and graceful, and their faces held an alien cast.
Do you remember the Graveguard? Gundrum murmured in his ear. It was made in a place such as this. These are Eldar.
Ruggalo continued to gaze in fascination. Then he removed the instrument from his eye and shrugged.
Interesting, but hardly worth coming into the Eye of Terror for. It is simply a viewing device with a number of scenes and images stored in it. No, it stores nothing. What you see is happening now. You are looking through the warp at things far off.
Seeing Ruggalo's scepticism, Gundrum said,
Look again.
The instrument was warm in Ruggalo's hand. He put it to his eye again. He was looking into the interior of what at first he took to be the largest cathedral imaginable. The vaulted roof was so far overhead as to be obscured by condensed water vapor clouds inside the building. Crowds of robed priests and acolytes thronged the nave. The aisles were flanking ranks of banners, torn, tattered, but still glowing with ancient colour, 100 yards in height. Multi-hued light filtered, gleaming on slowly moving murals, depicting battle after battle. The huge building buzzed with a febrile sense of activity. There was none of the calm prayer and contemplation. Ruggalo himself turned the magnification ring now. He seemed to progress down the nave towards the far chancery. Guarding the sanctuary, there stood 2 titans, the greatest war machines that could be used on land, which he had seen up to now only in Imperial Guard propaganda. One on either side, power fists raised as if in salute, and beyond, in the sanctuary itself, a shimmering golden globe, surrounded by a forest of cables and hoses, so numerous they almost occluded it, bracketed by field generators, both the source and the focus of all the excitement in the vast... Ruggalo snatched the instrument from his eye. It could not be. It was impossible. He could not be looking into the Emperor's throne room. Gundrum relieved him of the warp telescope, replaced it in its box, and the box in the sled.
Take these things to my ship. Fofo will direct you how to place them in the hold.
He turned away, then stopped, frowning upwards. From the distance, sliding through the lightning, three vehicles were flying low. They were more like boats than aircraft, with curved prows and lacking canopies, their cockpits open to the sky. Brief wings, more like vanes, angled sharply back. As they came closer, faces peered down over the sides. The craft circled the spot twice, emitting a noise rather like that of buzzsaws, spitting sparks from their rear ends, and then gently settled on the ochre turf.
"Ah, more visitors," Gundrum declared vigorously. "So many visitors. Who will be next?"
The local merchants, or were they merely artisans, had stopped hauling the sleds and now looked on with dumb foreboding as half a dozen warriors piled out of each airboat, variously armed, clad in makeshift armour of overlapping metal plates, fastened on with straps, metal helmets more resembling skullcaps strapped to their heads. The warriors all bore mutations. Their eyes sprang from their sockets on stalks which swiveled this way and that. Their ears had become bat's ears, long funnels which cast about in all directions. Their mouths were extraordinary, extended three quarters of the way around their heads, so that when open they looked as if their heads had been axed almost in half, and filled with spike-like teeth. Their arms were too short, only half the length of a normal man's, but this was made up for by long bony fingers which wrapped themselves around their weapons like tentacles. Their leader, his rank advertised by three froth-like yellow plants fixed to his helmet and his billowing red breeches, took a brief glance at the rainbow-painted spaceship, nodded to Gundrum in familiar fashion, then addressed the hauler of the leading sledge in a whining, snarling voice, more like the voice of an animal that had learned to speak.
"Ah, master, the high and lordly demon Spitting Bottom likes your liqueurs. He wishes to possess your distillery."
The crimson-tabarded industrial worker kept his head bowed.
"Sire," he said respectfully, "we serve the demon Moldgrime, who already owns the distillery, and also likes the products of our labour."
"Pah! And how does he treat you, his disgraced Moldgrime?"
"Very well. We live in peace and raise our families. Of course there are sacrifices at festival times. At the festival of no food we must hang up all our five-year-olds and disembowel them. At the five-day festival of Eat Nothing, we burn our four-year-olds alive. But these festivals come only every 2 years, and it is a welcome sacrifice to make to Moldgrime for all his blessings to us."
"Bah! Your Moldgrime is niggardly. What has he done for you? Your luck the same as you always did. Spitting Bottom will let you keep your children. All he demands is to eat your wives, and if you serve him well, eventually you will look like us."
The local man's head sank even lower, as did the heads of all his fellows.
"We cannot speak against Moldgrime, sir."
"No matter. As you know, on the other side of this world, Spitting Bottom has possession of one continent, and Moldgrime the other. Tonight, they are holding a contest on the island of Gross, Greece, to see whose champion can eat the greatest mass of worms, and thus expel the greatest weight of dung. If Spitting Bottom wins, he has the distillery, and this town with it. I come only to prepare you for your change of masters. Have plenty of essence ready."
With a ferocious gesture, the squad leader ordered his men to the airboats, which took off and buzzed their way back the way they had come. Gundrum, however, continued looking upwards.
"It often follows their wake. Yes, here it comes. It is close and low, and coming near. Follow me, you two," he said to Ruggalo and Kaladin, "and see what happens. This may be to your advantage."
He set off in a jerky run, his arms waving as though not properly fixed to his body, making his way up the shallow slope of the valley. More slowly, the other two came after him. They saw now what he had been watching for, making its way through the air, advancing majestically through the crackling, criss-crossing energy, was what at first looked like a patch of multi-hued mist. Gundrum paused at the top of the rise and waited for them to join him. Below was the crippled, wandering star.
"Once my ship was a common scow like yours," he told them. "This world's magic is what has made the difference. Watch."
It was like seeing a rainbow that had gathered itself up and become a scintillant giant amoeba, whipping itself through the air. It became less misty and more well-defined as it came closer. As it came on, it engulfed Ruggalo's starship, a rolling, amorphous shape that filled half the field of view. Ruggalo's heart leapt. His ship would be magically restored. The hull glowed and sparkled with all the colours that the rainbow cloud carried along with it. And then fell to pieces. He gaped. The rainbow cloud was ascending skywards again, now as it made the rise in the ground, its lower edge missing them by a good margin. It left behind a broken and sagging mass of crumpled metal. Gundrum grunted.
"Not to be, evidently."
He began walking down the slope. Ruggalo followed him despondently, leaving Kaladin at the top of the ridge. Gundrum picked up a piece of metal from the collapsed hull, showing it to him. The rainbow cloud had done more than just wreck his ship. The metal gleamed dully with oily colours.
"This scrap, at least, is worth something," Gundrum told him. "Everything on the worlds within the Eye of Terror, even metal, is soaked in the forces of chaos. Metal from outside has a novelty value. It is touched by chaos when given the rainbow treatment, of course, but in particularly pure form."
This was the most sensible speech Ruggalo had heard from the Chaos Trader. He threw down the lump of rainbow metal.
"Bad luck," Gundrum said.
He looked at Ruggalo with something resembling sympathy.
"Let's go back to the tent. You look as though you could do with some more essence."
Ruggalo did not have the heart to refuse. They rejoined Kaladin and strode back. Angelica was still sleeping, unaware of the visitation by the servants of the demon from the other side of the planet. The trio opened one bottle of liqueur, then another. Each bottle, it seemed, contained essence of a different colour. Whatever the distilling process was, it was very individualistic. Gundrum seemed ready to show a more human face. He described some of his travels in the Eye, though clearly he was leaving out some of the more bizarre details. After the second bottle was nearly finished, Kaladin asked him a serious question. "Do you believe in the Emperor?"
"Ah, our beloved Emperor," Gundrum rejoined jovially, "who holds together the human race and has charge of our souls, of course."
"Then you don't ever feel that what you are doing is wrong?"
"Wrong?"
Gundrum made an exaggerated grimace and relapsed into his former mode of speaking.
"Oh no, oh oh, oh no, oh oh. By my wordiness, oh no. I do not care about all of that. The priests will tell you everything is evil except the Emperor. Aliens are evil. Chaos is evil. How are aliens more evil than us? They are simply creatures, as we are. No, it is all the same to me. The Emperor is not captain of my soul."
Kaladin's normally pale face went even paler. Even Ruggalo, elevated as he was to a state of near ecstasy by the amount of liqueur he had drunk, was shocked to the core. He had never before encountered a man of such total amorality. True, he had traded with aliens, but like everyone else who did so, he believed deep down that he was doing something wicked, had even revelled in his sin. Murderers, thieves, swindlers and heretics, they all acknowledged the Emperor in their hearts. A man without even this elementary moral sense was incomprehensible to him. Embarrassed, he changed the subject.
"What has happened to Coyla? He did not return with the merchandise." "Unable to tear himself away from the distillery, no doubt." Gundrum sighed. He let out a roar. "Sister!"
Angelica woke up and looked about her sleepily. Her appearance was girlish and innocent. It was hard to believe she was the same person they had first met, or who had attacked Ruglow in such ghoulish form.
"Go into the town, find Coiler, and bring him here."
She went obediently out into the darkening gloom. In a little over half an hour, she was back, without Coiler, but carrying another small ribbed bottle.
"Coiler sent this," she said.
"Ah!" Gundrum seemed pleased.
He took the bottle from her hand, unsealed it, then poured into the acorn-sized glasses. The liqueur was a quite bright yellow, and poured more easily than usual, seeming thinner. Gundrum sniffed it, then sipped rather than take it straight down, rolling it around his mouth before swallowing.
New. Not given time to mature. Raw but refreshing. A brave little essence, I'd say.
Bottled hours ago, is my guess, Angelica giggled.
Ruggalo and Kaladin sampled theirs. It had, as Gundrum had said, a raw flavour. The taste of salt on their tongue was more limited but sharper. As it went into their stomachs, there was the usual explosion, but with an extra excitement to it. Ruglo grinned inanely and took some more.
"I like this."
Kaladin too liked it. He reached for the bottle. Then he noticed that Angelica had changed since she made the trip to the distillery. The withdrawn, slightly pathetic innocence was gone. Here was the magnetic, vampiric Angelica of previously. Her eyes had widened, becoming rounder and greener. Her exposed skin had firmed and glowed. She had moved to Ruglow and was tugging his goatee beard with one hand and running her fingernails along his neck with the other. The look she was giving him was ogling and predatory. Kaladin rose to his feet.
"Get away from her, Maynard," he said raggedly.
And that was all either of them knew. Ruglow became aware of the noises first. It was a while before he could open his eyes. There was a shuffling of feet and the mutter and murmur of voices. And there were other sounds, an intermittent hissing, like a slow-acting piston, liquid, bubbling, and pouring. Everything echoed, as it would in a large metal shed, which proved to be the case when the trader opened his eyes. He was lying on his side, on a hard floor. His hands and feet were tied together. Kaladin was in the same situation a few feet away. Both had been stripped of their las pistols. He became aware of a face looking down at him.
"Eh. Here we are, then."
The man was clad in drab blue overalls, tailored from some rough material. A workman. But he did not look unkindly. He called over some others who helped Ruggalo and Kaladin to a sitting position, leaning against the wall of the shed. It appeared to be next day. The flickering brown daylight came through openings in the roof. The shed was crammed with equipment. A small furnace was being stoked, sending thick smoke up a flume. The regular sighing sound came from an elaborate contraption, at the centre of which stood a fat yellow cylinder with which a piston was being pushed at intervals, and from which escaped gusts of powdery vapour. The contraption was connected to the inlet valves of a row of half a dozen vats arranged along the shed. These vats, in turn, had outlet cocks leading to storage cylinders lining one wall, one cylinder per vat. Ruggalo guessed they were in the distillery, which spanned the river. But why? The workman spoke to him.
"So, nice to see people from the outside. Hard to get good raw material, you know. I expect you want to know how it's done, don't you? It's a dipping process to begin with, you see. Then there's the rendering down. Well, you can see for yourself. Here are the people who came in before you."
Kaladin hissed words at Ruggalo.
"That last bottle must have been drugged."
Ruggalo became aware of an acrid smell. It came from a vapour being exhaled from the vats, and now he saw the people who came in before you, being led in, chained together, the Gendovians. They looked around themselves in bewilderment, then began struggling as the iron collars were removed and they were hung upside down by the feet from a movable belt, fitted with pulleys and running the length of the shed. When they each found themselves suspended over a vat, the screaming for mercy began. It was to no avail. The belt was lowered. Each Gundovian, flexing desperately, disappeared into his vat. Half a minute later, he came up again, spluttering and dripping, wailing with protest until he went down again. Squatting down beside Ruggalo to make himself heard over the screams, the distillery worker continued explaining the process in the same friendly, informative tone.
"The dipping has to go on for quite a while, you see. It's like making candles, except in reverse. Instead of putting tallow on the wick by degrees, the soul is gradually leached out of you. If you like, all the psychic content going into the liquid. Oh, that liquid is the secret of this business. No one else knows it. Not on this world. Not on any other. Well, I'm not saying any more about that, am I? That's our trade secret. What's it like? Well, I'm not going to say you'll enjoy it. You feel like everything being drawn out of you. It's quite uncomfortable. But after a while, you hardly know where or who you are, so they say. It's all gone into the solution. Then with the last dip, they leave you there and you stop breathing. The rendering down begins then. There's lots of chemicals and hormones and things like memory molecules out of your brain. All those things go into the brew too. Then we draw you off to clarify. After that, it goes to the still to be supplemented, then to casks for maturing. Been in this job all my life. I have. Ever since I was a boy. Proud of the work we do here, I am. Best liqueurs in the galaxy, and this is why. They are the essence of human being. Could there be anything better?
Having finished, taking pride in his craft, the distillery worker heaved himself to his feet and wandered off to be about his duties. Eventually, the Gondovians had ceased their struggling and were left for an hour or two totally submerged. Ruggalo and Kaladin now appreciated the full extent of Coyler's treachery. This was why he had brought them here, to be rendered down and distilled for the delection of others. But where was Coyler? Back with Gundrum, presumably. He had only left the tent, on Gundrum's orders, they recalled, to arrange for the drugged essence.
"This is Gundrum's real business," Ruggalo said through gritted teeth. "He isn't trading out of the eye so much as trading in. He brings people here to be turned into liqueur."
"Why would he need to do that? There are people here already."
Ruggalo thought about it. He remembered what Gundrum had said about local vintage, what he had said about the value of metal from outside.
"Everything here is corrupted by chaos, including people. People most of all. People from outside the Ayaterra. Uncorrupted, untainted, must make a superior product."
"People like us, you mean?" Kaladin added mournfully.
Ruggalo noticed him staring at something. He followed his gaze. Underneath one of the vats, perhaps accidentally kicked there, was an object he recognised. Coyler's melter gun. Now it was their turn for the vats.
"We can be of use to you!"
Ruggalo yelled eagerly as the workman approached.
"I'm a trader! My friend's a navigator! Take a look at his warp eye! We can bring you better material than Gundrum can. We know where to get lots of people. We won't charge much. Just give us a chance."
His increasingly frantic babble was ignored. His last pleas came as he found himself looking down into the murky, evil-smelling surface of whatever concoction it was accomplished the absorption of a man's essence, his nature, his life experience, his very soul. With the rattling of a chain, they were dunked into the brew. It felt oily, seeping reluctantly through their clothing. It stung Ruggalo's skin. He held his breath, but somehow it got into his mouth and his nostrils, making him choke. He seemed to be there for an eternity. Physically, he felt little, perhaps just a sense of melting away at the edges. But then this was the first dip. The chain rattled again as they were hauled free of the liquid. The more sensitive Kaladin had not held out as well as his partner. He came up blubbering and twisting from side to side.
"I can't stand this, Maynard! I can't! I can't stand it!"
His voice rose to a shriek as they descended again.
"Help me! Help me, Mother! Help me!"
Unlike Ruggalo, he had suffered more from the psychic effects of the dipping process than the physical. It was like being pulled apart from the inside. The absorbing fluid causing his psyche to seep out of him, as though by osmosis. It caused a pain that went beyond what he had ever experienced before. He thrashed about in the vat, trying to scream with his mouth full of the filthy-tasting liquid, feeling it enter his lungs. Then he heard a calm, cool voice.
"I'll help you, Pelor."
His mother's voice. He could feel her presence in the vat with him. His eyes were closed, but he clearly saw her face, her dear face, as she tried to comfort him. The rope holding him to the overhead belt snapped. He doubled up, rolling about in the bottom of the vat. The ropes tying his hands and feet seemed to have been weakened and made slippery by the oily absorption brew. They were slipping off as he struggled. He was free. He reached up and gripped the lip of the vat. Coming up after his second dip, Ruggalo quickly became aware that something had happened. Kaladin was no longer his dipping companion, no longer hanging beside him from the overhead belt. Instead, he was on the floor of the shed, wielding the melter gun. Its submolecular flame whooshed and roared ahead of him, vaporizing men and charring plant and machinery, sending out a wave of heat, which he could feel even where he was. Any it did not catch scattered and fled through the openings at the far end. Kaladin wasted no time in finding the pulley that worked the belt and lowering Ruggalo to the floor. After some difficulty, he undid the ropes. Gasping with relief, Ruggalo clawed sticky, smelly fluid from his face.
"How did you manage that, Pelor?"
Kaladin sobbed. He threw himself on Ruggalo's shoulder.
"It was my mother," he howled. "She released me. It's real after all. My mother is in hell, Maynard."
Ruggalo pushed him off and gave him a quizzical frown.
"Clearly," he said, "it's an advantage to have a mother in hell if you're in the Eye of Terror."
He snatched the melter gun from Kaladin.
"Come on, let's go settle accounts with Gundrum. We need his ship after all."
Kaladin stumbled after him.
"You might kill Gundrum and Coyla, but you can't kill Angelica with that thing. You saw what happened before. And anyway, we can't get out of the Eye without her."
Outside the shed, men were running past, but it was not because of the melter gun. The airboats had returned, landing just beyond the line of workshops. The troop leader from before was firing two crude slug pistols in the air, discharging messy gouts of flame and smoke, and urging his bizarrely mutated men on.
"Demon Spitting Bottom owns this town and distillery,"
he roared triumphantly.
"His champion defecated as much as 100-ton megastegosaur cud. Bring out your wives! Spitting Bottom is hungry!"
He spotted the drenched, oily-faced escapees from the vats and pulled up sharp.
"What are you doing? You are outsiders. Your bottles are for essence. Get back with you."
Ruggalo did not know how much fuel remained in the melter gun's reservoir. He displayed the weapon to the ruffian, hoping he would recognize it for what it was. A calculating look came to the troop leader's face, his eye stalks wavering from side to side. He turned to his men and made a bowling action with one arm.
On to the distillery.
Ruggalo continued as fast as he could along the river, Kaladin in tow, to discover that a few of the mutants had been left behind to seize the painted spaceship. They were pinned down behind their airboat, as were Gundrum and Fofo, crouched by the Scarlet Pavilion, exchanging laser with musket shot. There was no sign of either Coyla or Angelica. The quickest way to the starship was straight through the middle, between the two parties and into the line of fire. Ruggalo beckoned.
"When I say so, run for all you're worth,"
he said to Kaladin. So far, they had not been spotted, and they were too far away for the range of the melter gun, though worryingly in range of Gundrum's laser. Ruggalo took a deep breath.
"Now!"
He set off at a run. When he had covered half the distance, Gundrum turned and looked at him with a ludicrous expression of surprise. He let fly with a badly aimed laser shot. Ruggalo answered with a brief squeeze on the melter gun's trigger, the stock at his shoulder. There was a hissing as the blast of submolecular energy superheated the air through which it passed. He twisted round to let off another blast in the direction of the airboats. The melter gun was a short-range weapon, and he was still too far off to do any real harm, but through the haze it created he saw Gundrum fall back, raising his arms as though to ward off the heat. Fofo, however, took the opportunity to launch himself across the gap towards the mutants. Unwittingly, Ruggalo had given him covering fire. He and Kaladin ran through the same swirling haze of still hot air, feeling their skin burn. In seconds, they were past the small pavilion. Ruggalo glanced round and saw Fofo. close by the airboats, laying about him with his las pistol, the bright beam darting here and there. A white-blue beam hissed past Ruggalo's ear. He whirled round. Gundrum must have gone round the other side of the pavilion. He was standing on the ramp leading to his spaceship, both man and machine rearing over him, presenting the same odd, angled appearance. Ruggalo dodged another laser shot, and then, putting the Meltagun stock back to his shoulder, marched challengingly on. He was close enough now to be able to vaporize Gundrum. Realizing this, the trader pointed his las pistol at Kaladin. They came to the foot of the ramp. It was a standoff. With a glittering smile, Gundrum looked sidelong at Ruggalo, daring him to squeeze the trigger, knowing that his dying act would be to drill the navigator through the heart. His face lit up with delight, as though an idea had struck him.
By my roots, by my words, by my secret desires, what will you do? I will be gone. Your navigator will be gone. You will have to team up with my dear demented sister.
His eyes swiveled, looking towards the airboats. Ruggalo did likewise, making sure to keep Gundrum in view. His pistol's charge run low after killing half a dozen mutants. Fofo had thrown down his pistol and drawn a short, curved saber from a scabbard strapped to his thigh. At that moment, a musket ball took him in the chest. He staggered back and fell. The mutants were on him in a moment. His own saber was used to slash and slash at him, cutting his torso to ribbons. What happened next made Ruggalo sick to watch. As the now-dead Fofo lay there, the back of his head opened and his twisted companion, Gidane, emerged. The baby-sized midget got to his feet and toddled towards the painted ship, arms held out imploringly. The umbilical cord which attached him to Fofo had been cut by the saber. It trailed behind him on the turf, its end bloody. The grotesque thing did not get far. One of the mutants picked him up and held him before his face, his oversized mouth gaping in pleasure. The mutant seemed to think Gidane a baby. He started kissing him and licking him with a broad green tongue, while Gidane made faces of disgust and puked his protests.
"May I suggest we go inside?" Gundrum said quietly. "Gidane has found someone new to care for him, I think."
That suited Ruggalo. Weapons still trained on one another, they mounted the ramp. After a nod of permission from Ruggalo, Gundrum pressed a stud which raised it and made it flush with the hull. They were in an elevator. With a whine, it took them up, slid smoothly to a stop and opened onto the ship's interior. The first thing Ruggalo saw was Angelica. She was seated on a piece of furniture unfamiliar to him. Not a chair, but a stool which was able to swivel on a pedestal. A facility which she obviously liked, for she was turning herself playfully from side to side. She hunched herself up on seeing them and smiled invitingly.
"How nice to see you again," she said to Ruggalo. "Your name's Maynard, isn't it?"
Ruggalo didn't recall ever telling her his name. Perhaps the demon in her had plucked it out of the ether. They had entered what was a common arrangement in the small trading ship, a combined flight room and living accommodation, but its style was totally alien. Instead of the cluttered intricacies which was the norm everywhere in the industrialized Imperium, it had clean-swept lines, a streamlined look, like the external lines of the ship itself. There were no nooks and crannies, no protuberances and florid decorations, and the colors were pastel and uncomplicated. Ruggalo would never have been able to feel at ease here. It was a perversion, a product of chaos. Gundrum spoke softly.
"Do you realize you have made a mistake? You have given me the advantage. If I kill your navigator now, will you really fire that Meltagun in such a confined space? You would cook us both, as well as turn this control room to slag." "I don't care in the least about that," Ruggalo said confidently. "I'm ready to do it anyway."
But he noted that Gundrum had left Angelica out when describing the gun's effects.
"Where's Coiler?"
he demanded. Angelica giggled.
"He's on board."
Ruggalo allowed his glance to locate the flight panel. Apart from the lack of runes and ornate decoration, it was standard.
"Pelor," he ordered, "get over there and take us off this damn planet."
Gundrum still kept his las pistol on the navigator as Kaladin obeyed, seating himself at the strangely bare control board. The view screen, of an unfamiliar square shape, flickered on and the ship's engine roared smoothly into life. They lifted away, through crackling lightning and transient virtual figures, through the boiling brown cloud layer. Kaladin put them in parking orbit, looking down on the spiky planet which surrounded itself with a tracery of flashing energy. Without warning, Gundrum put up his las pistol.
"It is time for a truce," he said, imperturbably.
Ruggalo was reluctant to put up the melter gun likewise. He kept it pointed at the Chaos Trader.
"Bring Coiler here," he said. "I want to pay him back for the drug liqueur." "There was no drug liqueur. It was Angelica who put you to sleep. She can do it now, if she wants."
Ruggalo gulped.
"Show him, Angelica."
Angelica batted her eyelids at Kaladin. He slumped suddenly unconscious, his head hitting the control board. She blinked again. He recovered, looking around in puzzlement. Ruggalo was appalled at the realization that he was powerless. Gundrum had been playing with him. He put up the melter gun.
"What do you intend to do?" he asked. "Go back to Caligula with our cargo, or perhaps further off."
It had been Ruggalo's intention to go further than Caligula too, if he could. He had been plotting to steal Gundrum's ship and goods for himself.
"As for Coiler," Gundrum went on, "don't blame him too much. True, he betrayed you, but he couldn't help himself. He rescued you at first, remember? That was genuine. But poor Coiler is a man with no consistency, a weak person. He found he couldn't do without the liqueur, so he brought you to us as payment."
"You betrayed us too," Ruggalo pointed out.
"We betrayed you."
Gundrum performed the unnaturally high lifting of his eyebrows again.
"What did we owe you? Let me confess that at one time I had it in mind to spare you the vats. We are both traitors, after all. If the rainbow cloud had restored your ship to operational status, I would have let you go on your way. But,"
he shrugged with an exaggerated angular jerk of his shoulders,
"it was not to be. And you were valuable, after all, coming from outside the Eye. Those who make their own way here are most valuable of all. They are of the best quality, much better than those who are brought here as captives. That is why Angelica leaves us a trail for them to follow."
Ruggalo pondered.
"Where is Coiler?"
For answer, Gundrum pointed to a small, bare, round table. On it was a stoppered liqueur bottle of a yellowish colour. It was the same one that Angelica had brought back from the distillery.
"You've been drinking him!"
Ruggalo and Kaladin both stared, aghast.
"That is Coiler!"
Angelica trilled.
"Part of him, at any rate. The rest of him is in the cask, maturing."
"He had betrayed and abandoned us, remember?" Gundrum put in. "We could not have that, by my roots. But a fitting end, don't you think? Coiler knew he would end up in the bottle, sooner or later, I don't doubt."
Angelica stood.
"Let us be going, brother. Make amends to these two fools. Take them with us."
"Just as you wish, sister. You were ever soft-hearted."
She gestured Kaladin out of the pilot's seat and seated herself in his place, setting up the board for journey. Her movements were assured. It was clear she was an accomplished pilot. Ruggalo began to feel relief, mingled though it was with distrust. Without Angelica, they would never be able to leave the Eye. And here she was, offering to take them herself. But was it the woman or the demon making that offer? Suddenly, she looked up at the viewscreen, her hand making an adjustment.
"Brother, see."
All eyes went to the viewscreen. It showed a big, dark patch, surrounded by stars and glowing dust.
"The Rose Cluster. It has vanished."
Gundrum moved closer, his tall form bending and peering.
"No, it is still there. See, it occludes the stars behind it.
It has gone dark, that is all.
Yes, I see it, Angelica murmured. The cycle has turned. This is a good time to be leaving, brother.
She gave her attention back to the pilot's instruments. She was turning the ship around, preparatory to setting out. The swirling brown and red sphere of the spike planet's sun hove into view on the screen. Kaladin and Ruggalo both went rigid with terror, the sun convulsed while an angry-faced head and shoulders poked out, looking around itself briefly, then withdrew, the sun closing up after it to swirl red and brown as before, a turbulent ball. If Gundren and Angelica had noticed the vision, they made no comment. Angelica yanked a lever. The painted starship shot off, leaving the sun with its solitary planet behind. Then she gave out a high-pitched cry.
Brother! We are out of control! We are falling! Something has hold of us! I can't pull out!
On the view screen, all stars disappeared. There was only a glimmering blackness. They were falling. Not onto the spiked planet. Not into its angry sun. They were plummeting deep into the darkness that was once the Rose Cluster. Jesus, that was long. Yeah. Thanks for watching, everybody. Please give a like, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know in the comments what you thought of it below. Thanks to everybody supporting the channel. Really appreciate it, lads. All right, I'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.